Hey, do you hear those footsteps? Yeah, those are your footsteps, because today you've made a decision to change your attitude, to strengthen your beliefs, and to maximize your mindset. So it's time to get ready, grab a backpack, a bottle of water, and you better lace up those hiking boots, because this is the Mindset Mountain Podcast with Eddie Aguilar and Jason J. Boom Ligard, because believe me, it is your time to climb.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Jason J. Boom Ligard here with the Mindset Mountain Podcast. It's Wednesday, which means, of course, it's time for another interview episode. And normally with these intros, I try to be extra high energy. I try to add a little something to the introductions of these episodes. That's not necessary today. This is the simplest and easiest intro I ever need to do, because we got a chance to sit down with our brand new brother in arms, Danny Page. And all I need to tell you is invest in yourself for the next hour, hour and a half. Sit somewhere quiet, put in your earbuds, put on your headphones, and all I need you to do is listen with an open heart and an open mind, just like we did, because Eddie and I didn't have to do a damn thing when it came to Danny Page sharing his story on air for the very first time. So help us in welcoming Danny Page. Boom! What is up, everybody? Jason J. Boom Ligard here of the Mindset Mountain Podcast. I tell you what, every week when we get a chance to sit down with another amazing guest, my level of gratitude just goes through the roof. I mean, and this is just another one that's just par for the course. My co-host, my business brother up in Flag, Eddie Aguilar, reached out to this gentleman. He's a mutual friend of other new mutual friends, and he's going to be appearing at Meltdown in the Desert late June. And Eddie, I know you've been talking to this man for a while, and we got this coordinated, and what a way to kick off. We're recording this on Memorial Day, and I got an extra level of gratitude, brother.
Definitely. I appreciate this, and I'm stoked. And we wanted to give out, even though this is not coming out on Memorial Day, give a shout out to those that have never come back from combat, those that have sacrificed and paid the ultimate sacrifice for us to have the opportunity to sit here and record such an episode, and also create something good of it. And I reached out to this guy, saw he was a mutual friend of some other mutual friends, and actually was going to work towards getting to this guy. And thankfully he heard one of our episodes with Colby K and said, "Hey, I need to reach out to these guys." I messaged him, and we've been going back and forth, and wanted to welcome our guest from Gilbert, Arizona, Danny Page. How you doing, brother?
Good, guys. Thank you so much. I just want to send out a great thank you to both of you for the opportunity to be on your show, first and foremost, and secondary, just to be able to share my story and see if I can help others and serve others.
Well, I think you're going to do that and some. So, Jason, let's get this bad boy going.
All right. Yeah, Danny, you know, this interview, we're going to keep it very free flow, but we always like to start with just kind of like a standard foundation question that we ask all our guests, because we love everyone's very unique answers. And that question for you, brother, is what is your personal definition of mindset?
My personal definition of mindset is how you do one thing is how you do all things. And I equate that to every single aspect of my life. The way that I hug my wife is the way that I work out. The same intensity. The same intensity that I bring to my business is the same intensity that I bring to my family. So the way that I attack something in life, mindset-wise, is going to fall into all other sectors, all other areas of my life. And it's very, very, very important for me and for the listeners to understand that you can't put 50% into your job and expect to put 100% into your physical health, your mental health, your relationships, all areas. So how you do one thing is how you do all things.
Oh, I love that, man. It reminds me, a friend of ours, a previous guest, Sean Stevenson of Model Health Show, he made a funny reference to that, where he said, like, you know, how you do the dishes is also, you know, are you doing the dishes at the same level that you go do your take care of your health and fitness? And so I love that aspect, because, yeah, I mean, it's all intertwined. And if you're slacking in one, well, you'll slack in the other.
It's true. Honestly, Jason, like I actually to the point now where I'm so mentally aware of it that I'm walking by and I'll drop a piece of paper on the floor. Like you, my daughter and I went to lunch yesterday and I ripped a straw the top off and that little piece of paper fell to the ground. Now, 3 years ago, I would have walked past that and been like, you know what? Somebody else is going to pick that up. But for me, it's like, you know what? Pick that up, throw it away. Because how you do that is how it's going to equate into all other areas of my life. So it's just like this constant spinning in my head where I'm always uber focused on putting 110% into everything I do.
Oh, I love it. Love it. Eddie, brother, what are you thinking, man?
Oh, man, what's funny, and I know this is somebody you recently connected with, but as you were talking about that, I heard your new friend or your good friend Andy Frisella talk about that on the MF CEO project where he talked about, you know, trash sitting on the ground and, you know, 10, 15 people walking by it, nobody picking it up, and he'll walk by it and pick it up and in the sense of, you know, he's picking up the trash, keeping the world in order somewhat. So I love that. I love that.
It carries over into my work in coaching. When I have these guys and these girls come in and, you know, they're doing so well in one aspect of their life, right? They've got this business, they've got all this money, and they've got all these great things happening, the cool cars and the jets. But every other part of their life is just hurting. And when you start to paint this picture for them and how picking up that silly piece of paper, how keeping your house organized and clean, your desk at your office, how that equates over, how that translates over into how you do your pull-ups, how you do your squats, how you show up early for your daughter's basketball game. It's just one thing attaches to another, leads to another. And you can never be fully where you're going to want to be in life unless you put that energy in.
I love it. I love it. I agree. And for those of you wondering why this guy's talking about fitness and pull-ups and whatnot, if you see a picture, you'll know exactly the importance of fitness. So Danny's a chiseled specimen, but that's a good place to start. And how important is fitness to you? Is fitness kind of your starting point or balance, or is kind of the trigger towards the rest of your life?
You know, that's a great question. It used to be, guys, honestly, fitness was my whole life revolved around fitness. But the problem was for me, fitness was something that was an outside. It was how chiseled could I be? How big could I be? You know, how ripped could I be? And it was always that vain appearance in the mirror. And what I've learned over the last couple years through some tragedies and some downfalls in my life is it's not necessarily what's on the outside. It's how good of shape on the inside am I? And the harder I work and the more I'm able to run and the faster and the harder I'm able to push myself in the gym each day to where I'm pushing myself past the limit from the previous day, it has expanded my mind so much and got me in so much better health. There was a point like a year ago when I had to go through this workout, and in my head I'm thinking, you've been in this industry for 18 years. You are the person that's in the best shape of your life. And I got put into this workout, guys, that literally kicked my ass. And I sat there and almost cried and puked, wondering, what have I been doing for the last 17 years? You know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm in great shape. I look great, but on the inside, I wasn't. I was lying to myself, and I was lying to everybody else. It was like this facade that I had put up. And so fitness, yes, is a major part of my life. There's three other sections that are just as important for me, and it's how I start my day every day. So there's my body, which is very important, balance, which is my relationships with you guys, my relationships with my clients, most importantly, my relationship with myself, my wife and daughter. The other section is my being section, and that's my spirituality. That's that meditation that I do first thing in the morning. And then lastly is also business. I'm always looking to take one step further each day to move myself in a more successful direction. So what I've had to do, guys, is I've really had to not just focus on fitness, but focus on all four sections, that four-section piece. And that's how I start my day before anybody else. And that's where the term the king eats first comes from. Danny's got to take care of Danny first. Danny has to put that air mask on as the airplane's going down, that oxygen mask. I have to put that on first before I can take care of my family. And so that's why I wake up at 3:15 in the morning, is so that I can take care of all of those pieces of my puzzle before I get on the phone calls, before I turn the cell phone on, before I get into social media, before I answer the emails. And that's one of the biggest paradigm changes in my life that I've ever had.
I love what you just shared, and thanks for sharing that. The body balance, being in business, and also starting your day early to where many people would not understand or don't understand the 3:15 morning, you know, 3:15 wake up, so on and so forth. But what you're doing, correct me if I'm wrong, is creating time for you. You're shutting out the world. You're creating your focus on you, putting your focus on you, so that way you can serve the world in a better way. And I know too many of us get selfish. unselfish in a sense that we got to take care of everybody else. And in doing so, we run ourselves ragged.
We do. I love the analogy of the lighthouse and the tugboat. And I, you know, over the last year have really, truly taken that analogy, that metaphor, and made it my life. I became a lighthouse. And a lighthouse is that strong figure that stands on the edges of the rocks. And what it does is it casts that light and it shows it to everybody and it says, hey, this is where safe harbor is. Come this direction. Here's where the harbor is. Follow me. I'm going to be the big light that shines to everybody. And what I used to be, guys, what I ran myself into the ground was by being a tugboat, by helping her, by helping him, by helping her. Tugboats go from boat to boat to boat to boat, and all they do is they try to fix everybody. And ultimately what they do is they wear themselves down and they fail. They fall apart. They go where I went. And that's just some really, really dark, bad places in my life. So I've really taken on this persona of be the lighthouse, be the person on social media that shows everybody, look, there's a different way to do things. There's a different way to think. There's a different way to act. And it's really been something that I've taken in like wholeheartedly and made part of like my soul and my spirit and my heart is that mentality of thinking. And it, guys, don't get me wrong. It's tough some days, right? It's Memorial Day weekend. It's Monday. It's a holiday. And that clock goes off at 3:15 this morning. I had to do it though. It's if I don't, it's going to start to fall backwards. That first day becomes a second day that you take a break, becomes a third day, and then the pattern has begun.
I love that, Jason.
Well, I just, I don't know. It's funny, man. I'm getting emotional here, Danny. Just the way you just said that now, like, you know, today's Memorial Day. It's a holiday, and you're like, I had to honor that alarm at 3:15 because the first day can't become the second day, and I don't know, especially, I guess, maybe on a day like today, which is about, it's about sacrifice. And it's about, well, will you step up and embrace and take advantage of a sacrifice that was already done for you? And to hear you say that today of all days, I hope folks that are listening, like, maybe look at your morning routine and what the hell you're doing for you first. In that light, because maybe that'll break you out of that funk of like, oh, woe is me, pity party, I'm too tired, let me hit the snooze 18 times. It's Memorial Day and Danny's up at 3:15 because he understands, hey, this is your way to sacrifice, to be that lighthouse, you know, and to shine no matter what. Like it's our job to shine, period. You know, there's no discussion.
True. It's 365 days a year. And I use the word ruthlessly committed and non-negotiable. What I do every day by waking up so early is a non-negotiable item. It doesn't matter if it's a holiday. It doesn't matter if it's sick, if I'm sick. It doesn't matter if there's, you know, the whole world is falling apart. I can't break that system because, you know why, guys? Because it works. When you find something that works, you have to do it. And sometimes it's a sacrifice. Sometimes it's not fun. Sometimes it's not easy. But if you do the work, you get the result. And that's what a lot of people are afraid to do.
Yep.
And Dan, go ahead, Jason, if you're going to go.
No, I was just going to say, you kind of alluded, maybe this is where you're headed next, Eddie, but you talked about, you know, some of these dark times that led you to certain dark times And we know a bit about that from connecting with you. And I think, you know, this is a big part of our show, Danny, and is we want to hear, we don't want to hear all the highlights and you know, the Steph Curry threes, you know, and all that type of stuff. Like, we want to hear, for our audience's sake, you know, they look at you now and they're like, look at this beast. I mean, the shape he's in and the attitude and the powerful presence in his business and this. It's like, but, you know, as you've shared on your page, like, it wasn't always like this. And there's definitely an aspect of the phoenix rising from the ashes. So I'd love if you're willing to go there, brother, even just a piece of that darkness, so we can show people, hey, it can be that pitch black, but what's waiting on the other side of that is just, it's an ultimate freedom that you can't even put a price on.
It is. It's, you know, I people ask me, they're like, well, what is your story? And I always kind of allude to the idea that what I'm about to tell you is a nasty mess. It's a message that's really bad. But my mess, if you will, my past, has become my message that I now live by. And I wouldn't trade it, guys, for anything in the world. 2 years ago, if you asked me that, I wouldn't have given you that same answer. But everything started a very long time ago. And on Christmas Eve, December 24th of 1984, I had a sister that was 9 years older than me. She was 14 years old. I was 5. I grew up in a Catholic household, a very conservative, you know, Catholic household. And we were getting ready for Christmas Eve Mass. And I'll never forget, the tree was decorated. The presents were underneath the tree. And my sister was complaining about this headache. Danny, you know, Mom and Dad, I've got this headache on the front of my head. And we had just opened, you know, that first Christmas Eve present. My folks always said, you know, let's open one present, you know, this night before, and then Santa will come the next day, and then all the gifts will be there. So my folks were packing to go to Mass, which was, you know, 15 or 20 minute drive away. And my sister's, you know, kind of complaining about these headaches and things. And meanwhile, I'm opening up my package. Like, what did I get? And I got a Polaroid camera. So you guys can imagine how long ago this was. An old Polaroid camera. It was a Canon. I'll never forget it. And I started playing with it. And Wendy's was complaining about these headaches more and more. And my folks said, you know what? Why don't you guys just stay home? And I kind of weaseled my way out of it and said, I'll take care of her. You know, I'll stay here and hold her hand. And she'll be fine. You guys go to church and we'll be here when you get back. So they were gone, guys, about 15 or 20 minutes. And I'm starting to take pictures of my sister. And she's got this old accountant style like calculator out. And she's, you know, trying to teach me how to use it and things like that. And she's got a notebook out. She's drawn some pictures and kind of drawn a picture of a horse. I'll never forget it. And she had a blue ice pack over her head because these headaches were getting to be worse and worse. And then it was a couple minutes later, and I will never forget the screams that filled that house in my head. At that time, I didn't know this, but my sister had a massive brain aneurysm. And she went into some very just intense convulsions of her body. I will never to this day forget the screams and the look on her face. And in 1984, at 5 years old, there wasn't such thing as 911. There was the old phone number to the police department, but I was not old enough to know how to use a telephone. So I watched my sister shake and scream, and I held her hand, and I held her, and I hugged her, and I cried, and she cried, and she drifted off to another place before my parents had gotten home. I'll never forget when they got home, they were excited and they were, you know, ready to begin the whole Christmas season. And they could see her laying on the couch and that she wasn't there. And my folks saw my face. And I'll never forget, they just grabbed her. They picked her up like a body and her arms and legs just hang there. And they threw her into the truck, and I'll never forget the sound of my dad's 454 leaving my house. And I would suppose that that's probably around 8 p.m. on this evening. And I didn't see anybody for what seemed to be about 12 or 13 hours. My folks were at the hospital trying to save my sister's life. And I sat at home for hours before I fell asleep, not knowing what had happened. There's no cell phones back then, and my folks were trying their hardest to resuscitate and bring back my sister. And of course, I was not on their radar. They were trying to save their child's life. And somewhere in that period of time, my sister passed on. My folks ended up coming home that next morning, which was Christmas morning, and people started to just randomly show up, aunts and uncles and friends and family. And I'll never forget, my parents took me into their bedroom and sat me down, and they looked at me and they said, "Your sister's not going to be here this morning for Christmas." And I proceeded to go into the living room and great room and begin to open presents. And guys, I'll never forget this, because there were pictures taken that day with that same Polaroid camera that I can look at now, and you can see the morbid looks on everybody's faces but my own, because I wasn't old enough and I couldn't comprehend what had happened. And I don't think my parents were capable of really doing that with me at that time either. So we went through Christmas and I opened up those presents, and it just was another day for me. And that set a pit in my stomach that began a lifelong pain and hurt that has manifested itself in many different ways. As I started to grow older from this situation, I never looked for help, and my folks, God bless them, they never tried to seek help either. We didn't have any counseling. We didn't have any understanding. We didn't have any closure. And for me, my sister was just gone, and I didn't understand why. And I became very mad at God and my folks. And I was always constantly asking myself, why? And it developed like this anger, if you will, this kind of darkness, this dark energy that kind of resided inside of me. So as I got a little bit older into junior high and high school, I found sports, and I found football and wrestling, and I found that I could perform in these very well by tapping into this darkness, into this anger, and by hitting people. And I would let that anger, I would let that darkness out in these sporting activities, and it seemed to kind of balance me out. And I was able to coexist, if you will, with the memories in the past that I'd never truly dealt with. The problem was, is it was a ticking time bomb, and it just kept growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's off limits, to talk about this stuff with my folks, because it was something that, unfortunately, God bless them, they'd never dealt with either. And I completely understand why, but they just weren't able to do it. So as I graduated high school, I got into college, and I started to not have that outlet anymore of playing sports. So that outlet became these drugs and alcohol, which would numb those pains and feelings. I would have these like massive outbreaks in my head of like fits of rage and anger, and I was able to reach over and grab a bottle, put my attention towards going to a bar or a nightclub, and check out. And that's what began to happen as I got into college. I was a student at Arizona State University here, and had phenomenal grades, and I still just was the spinning image, this facade of what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be successful, supposed to be in great shape, supposed to be all these things. And I was always trying to like make my parents a little extra happy, right? I felt like, God let them down, and they lost one. So maybe if I shine a little more, maybe if I polished everything up just a little bit more, and put on this little dog and pony show for them, maybe they'll be even more impressed and give me more attention, because I was lacking in that area. And that's where like the lies began, guys. So now I've got the drugs and the alcohol to numb the pain, but then I've got these lies that I start to tell people. Start to tell my folks, my grades are better than average. I started to tell friends and family I'm making a lot more money than I actually was. And I became this liar to everybody. Lo and behold, like, people knew it, though. That's the thing, but I didn't, because I lived in this cave in my head. People refer to me as compulsive. That was my nickname behind my back, like for compulsive liar. And I never knew it, and I never paid attention, and I never cared, because I became so self-centered, so just uber-focused on myself, and I'm going to do this, and I want this, and I want this. So with this drugs and this alcohol and this energy and rage, I learned that I could start my own business, my personal training company. I could start this company called Team Core and put all of this energy and focus and aggression into this business and make a lot of money. So from like 2001 to 2005, I just murdered the industry and made so much money that as a 24, 25-year-old, I built my first custom home and bought my first lot and had a $1 million home with a $1 million view up in Mesa and had the cars, and I started to buy more and more toys, and I had the boats and the girlfriends and the parties. And here I am thinking that I'm just creating this life of happiness. But deep down inside, I just began to hurt more and more and more. And that flame that I discussed earlier got bigger and bigger and bigger. So when the economy changed in about 2008, being a very young person with zero know-how of the industry of real estate and economy and things like that, I'm still running ragged with, you know, partying and working and just running through my money as fast as I can possibly make it. The market took that turn that we all know. And that was one of my first reality checks in life, was to lose my home. I had to do a short sell on it, which negatively affected my credit so poorly that at that time, who's with me now, my wife and daughter with me, I'll never forget getting the letter saying, you guys have 30 days to be out. And that's when reality started to set in about this whole facade maybe isn't really truth. Maybe it isn't real anymore. And 30 days we had to pack up. Where were we going to go? Where were we going to live? Were we going to rent? We've got all this great stuff in here. We've made this huge lifestyle that's just smoke and mirrors to everybody. And we downgraded, and I'll never forget, we rented this house way, way out in Queen Creek. And we became like this ranch family. Danny tried to change the whole persona, because I'm like this chameleon, as you'll see as I tell my story. I thought, well, maybe we'll try to blend in out here. Let's get some horses, and let's join the sheriff's department. Let's join search and rescue. Let's go out and find people. Let's get the badge, and let's wear the gun, and let's look that part now, because we're not on the boats and the rich, successful life. We're not living in the big gated community anymore. So I brought my family from one section of the world over now to another section of the world, and the God bless them, they hung in there with me. So we've now moved, and we started this new life out here where we don't know anybody. And we're now commuting 45 minutes each direction to work and to my daughter's school, 45 minutes a day. And it just crushed us. It really did. It really started to crush us as a family. And it started to really wear on me, because the lies were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So I thought to myself, how can I fix this? You know what? I'm going to propose. I'm going to get engaged. I'm going to marry this girl. We're going to get married, and that's going to fix everything. Everybody will see that I've got my shit together and things are fine. So I went to a Cubs game, and I paid the people here in spring training, and I made the arrangements, and seventh inning stretch comes about, and I bring her and I grab her hand, and I'm like, let's go walk down there. Let's go sing the seventh inning stretch. Let's go sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We did it. And she looked at me like, you're freaking crazy. What are you doing? You don't do this. And I'll never forget, we walked down on the dugout and we sang that song together, and it was filmed, and my folks were sitting there right, up in front of us. And I took a knee when it was over, and I reached in my pocket and I put a ring on her finger. And we got engaged at that ball game. It was on her birthday on March 20th. And I thought that was going to fix everything. But the problem was I hadn't fixed myself yet. I was actually just a sinking ship that was going lower and lower. So we were engaged for a while, and we started to work together, and we started to continue to try to build our family and do the things that we thought we could do to try to get ourselves out of debt and live this facade of a lifestyle. But Becca, that's my wife, she could see through it, and she knew that it wasn't authentic. She knew that I wasn't being real with her. But she hung in there because she loved me wholeheartedly, and so did my daughter. So I'm watching the film, this video footage of me proposing, and I'm watching my folks, and I could see, like, they weren't happy. I could see my dad, like, with this angry look on his face, and I could see my mom shaking their head, and, you know, even though they were there, they weren't there. They weren't supportive. There was no connection there, and I don't know where that came from. It just didn't connect. So I went and had a talk with my folks, and I sat down with my dad, and I said, why aren't you supportive of this? We're working our ass off. We're hanging in there by a thread, and we've pretty much lost everything. And I think that this opportunity in my life to create this family and create this relationship with this beautiful woman and this amazing little girl, that you would be happy. Why not? Gentlemen, I'll never forget the look that he gave me. He looked at me and he said, I wish your sister was here. I wish you weren't here. I wish you had died and not her. And I'll never forget that. I'll never forget the outfit that I was wearing. I'll never forget the temperature outside. I was so aware of that moment in my life. And that was the one, that was the last punch that Danny Page could take. And I never, ever spoke to them after that. I got into my truck and I went home and I put 110% into my family, what I thought was 110%. But deep down inside, like as a man, I'm not afraid to admit it, that hurt me more than anything, and I cried my eyes out because that was the only family I had left. I felt God or somebody else had taken my sister away from me, and now my father thinks that I should be underground and that he wishes his little girl had been back. Things started to run through my head that he had told me. All those times I took you fishing and hunting, I did it to make your mother happy. I didn't want to be with you. All those stupid things we bought you, college, the truck, the dances you went to, the new outfits, I did that to keep your mom at bay because I just am irritated with you and I can't stand you. So I kept playing this back in my head, and that's what we do when we get into a tailspin is we replay the bad, and we don't focus on the good. We don't look downfield at what we could create. We just think about the waste and the tarnish that's behind us. And that's when it began. That's when the wheels began to come off the bus. That's when the drinking and the drugs started to get more and more out of control, and the spending and everything. And my attention went towards other women, and how can I feel this void? Let me go talk to this girl. Let me text this girl. Let me talk to these two girls. Let me tell my wife I'm supposed to be at work, but let me go out and let me go cheat on her behind her back. Let me be a lying shit. And that's what I did. And that just pulled more and more and more pieces of the onion off. More layers started to get shed. And it didn't take much longer before we split. We didn't even make it 8 months. And we got into a nasty fight, and I threw whatever little things I could into my truck, and I disappeared. I found a condo that was, you know, close to the office, and it was like this bachelor pad. It had no furniture. It had a television and a couch and a bed. But it was on a lake, and I thought, hey, this is cool. Chicks will come over. Chicks will dig this. You know, I'm going to start over. And so, like, I burned through my relationship. This marriage was, like, nothing. Like, I didn't care. And it was, like, careless, just like everything else I'd been in my life. Careless with my health, with this drug abuse and this alcohol. Careless with, you know, the lies. Careless with my finances. Letting everything just fall and crush beneath me. So here I am, reaching out to my folks. Like, hey, bail me out. I've got a divorce coming. You know, I got to save whatever I got, and you guys need to come bail me out. Sure enough, they bail me out. They come and save me again. So I've got the divorce. Everything's working. Everything's fine. And now I've got this little bachelor pad. And what did I do? I was like, I need something to do. I need something to grab my attention, something to entertain me. It's Wednesday night. Let's go out. Let's go to the bar. I lived like 15 minutes from Scottsdale, and I became one of those guys that went out like Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night, and Saturday night, and then I'd kind of stay awake all day through Sunday and do what we call Sunday Funday, and by like you know, late Sunday night, early Monday morning, I was just a catastrophe of like emptiness. And I would go to work for a couple days and like get some rest and get some food and exercise and try to take care of myself and build myself back up. So by Wednesday night or Thursday night, I could go back out and just completely crush myself. And I became like this person that just existed. I wasn't, you know, extraordinary. I was just ordinary. And I just was a flatline. I was this one-dimensional guy that had nothing to live for anymore. Nothing to live for. I'd lost everything. And I was just out there flushing it down the toilet. My health, my brain, everything. And I pushed everybody away. The divorce papers came through exactly 365 days after we got married. We were officially married on September 11th of 2011. What a wonderful day, huh? And even being Memorial Day, it's even more impactful and it hits me harder in my gut right now as I tell you this. But we were divorced on September 11th of 2012. 365 days, and it was not planned that way. It was the way the judge did it. So there was some meaning behind that. There was some meaning of, you know, destruction and the buildings and our life falling to pieces. This just, like you could look at our year of marriage. You could look at the five and a half years that we were together, and you could see the pieces all falling. And it was 100% my fault. Total ownership of it. When those divorce papers came through, I was able to position myself and kind of start to rebuild. Like that was this reality check of, okay, we can't keep doing this condo thing. We got the money. We've got the house back. They're off on their own, my wife and daughter, ex-wife at this time. They're doing their own thing. Let's just start to put the pieces back to the puzzle. Let's start making money again. I was able to do that. I'm a business person. I'm an entrepreneur. When I want something, I get it. So I started to build that money back up and started to back off a little bit on the drugs and alcohol and things like that. But there was still that ticking time bomb inside. And it was still growing and growing and growing and growing. My ex-wife gave me a phone call and said, your daughter's got a sleepover across the street from where you live right now. Would it be okay if you know, the three of us took her over there just for shits and giggles, like for old time's sakes? Absolutely. Let's do it. We dropped my daughter off. And I looked over at my ex-wife and I said, do you want to go do something? She's like, sure, let's do it. You want to go grab a drink? Yeah, why not? Let's do it. So we got onto the freeway and I asked her, I'm like, where would you like to go? Like, what would you like to do? And she said, well, you always talk about this restaurant your friend owns. It's a place that, and everybody talks about it. You like live there. This is your little hangout. I would love to go there. Well, heck yeah, let's do it. Let's go to Seersucker. It's over in Scottsdale. Let's run over there. So we go over there and it's, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock. And we walk in and I know everybody and make myself feel like I'm this cool person, this star. And again, it's just this facade. We sit down at a table and the first waitress comes over and gives me a hug and, hey, how's it going? And everything. And I really don't introduce my ex-wife as anything. I just kind of play it off. And the waitress kind of tells me stories and tells us stories about, you know, all the great people that had been in that night and these girls that she always sees me there with, you know, had just been in. And meanwhile, inside, I'm going, shush, be quiet, shut up. You're going to get me in trouble. These lies could catch up to me right now. Don't do this. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm about to lose my shit here. I'm going to get a drink. So I started ordering doubles and then I ordered triples. And I'll never forget, they were like a cranberry with a little bit of Sprite and a little bit of fizz and three shots of vodka. Nine of those go down in a period of about an hour and 10 minutes. And I'm sitting at this long table with community around me, right? It's a community table. And somebody else comes over and says something that just totally makes me snap. And at that time, I lose my shit for the first time in my entire life, where it was like, all right, so this is about 16 to 20 years of explosion or implosion that's about to blow its gasket. And I just lost it and started melting off to my ex-wife and got just brutally nasty with her. And I came off of my chair so hard and hit her with my elbow that it knocked her to the ground. And she was like, that's it. I'm done with you. So I chase her out to the parking lot, and we're in front of this restaurant and bar, and the valet's right there. And I'm thinking to myself, you're smarter than this. Get out of this like situation in front and go handle your business over on the side of this building. Lo and behold, on the side of this Neiman Marcus building, there's video cameras everywhere, surveillance, the whole nine yards. I'm not thinking, I'm so out in left field. I'm not only intoxicated, but I'm also just like frustrated and angry and filled with resentment about every single thing in my life. And the problem was is that I was blaming everybody else. I wasn't blaming myself. It was everybody else's fault. And I lost my shit, guys. I hurt her, and I hurt myself. And I walked, after hurting both of us, I walked to the car. I got into my bag, and I pulled out a .45. Never forget it. It was a Glock 36, compact .45. And I walked back over to her, and she was laying on the ground crying, and I sat on top of her, and I chambered that first round, and I put that into my mouth and said, "Is this what you want? Because this is what I want. Because I can't live like this anymore. This whole life is shit. My life is shit. And I don't want to be here anymore. And I don't want to fight with you anymore. And I don't want to feel like this inside anymore." And I started to just scream and cry. But I wasn't able to pull that trigger. It wasn't a cry for help. It was something stopped me at that moment. And that's where the whole awakening began. I heard sirens. I heard people. There were people around me. I'm looking like around as I'm sitting on top of a person who were both bleeding, and I've got a loaded gun in my mouth. And I'm thinking, I'm in the middle of this town. Everything's over. So I either blow my head off now, or I get out of this situation and I'm going to go to jail, or I'm going to blow my head off somewhere else. I made her. I'm like, get me out of here. We got into the car, we spun out of there before the police arrived, and we made it about two or three blocks, and we stopped. She was driving, she said, get out. I'm done, I can't live with this anymore. You are going to hurt yourself so badly that you're going to end up hurting everybody else around you. You're a time bomb, and you just blew up, and I'm done. Good luck, and God bless, Danny, take care. Egotistical little shit that I am, this is my car. You leave. You get out of here. I'm done. And I crawl over into the driver's seat. She walks in front. And I'm in the parking lot of like a supermarket. And I scream out of there and swerve to get away from her. Of the 12 people that called 911, one of these people was in this parking lot and said, there's this enraged guy and he's in a Jeep. And he's lost his shit and he tried to run over this woman. So along with all the other things that have now been or going to be charged against me legally, now I've got a charge of like I'm trying to run somebody over. Was I? Absolutely not. It's just what it appeared to be, though. So that gets added to it. I drove home, and I have no idea how I got home. I will never understand how I was, because I wasn't able to stand up. So to think that I drove home like this blows my mind. When I got home, it was like, you know what? I'm safe. Things are okay. I'm just going to take a sleeping pill. I'm going to go to sleep and wake up. And tomorrow we'll start fresh. I think it was about maybe an hour and a half or 2 hours by the time that the authorities had pinged my cell phone and located me. And knock, 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 knock. I'm half out of it. I'm on a sleeping medication, so I'm half asleep. And I'm in my boxer shorts. And I kind of like walk to the door thinking, oh, this is probably her. And I open the door and I have like these red dots all over my head and my throat and my chest from these lasers from these SWAT teams. The dogs barking, about to go nuts to rip me to shreds. And that's the moment that the first instance of awareness and reality set in. Handcuffed, immediately thrown to the ground, well deserved. House is pitch black. I see flashlights everywhere. I see AR-15s and Glocks and red lasers everywhere, and they dragged me to my closet and threw a pair of jeans on, a pair of shoes, and a t-shirt, grabbed my identification, and threw me in the back of a car. They transported me to a gas station, which is directly right across the street from where my sister's buried, from a cemetery that I've never been able to go to in my entire life. So I live 35 miles away from this cemetery. Why in the world are you guys going to transport me to this location to exchange me to a different authority so that you can lock me into a county lockup? For like 2 hours, I had to sit in the back of this vehicle, like with the handcuffs and trying to like realize like the magnitude of what has just happened and how big of a shitstorm I have created for myself. And this is where ownership, self-ownership, and taking responsibility for myself for the first time in my life slapped me upside the head. Once I got there, I got transported to a small lockup, which was like a drunk tank, but it was literally a 4x4 square concrete box. Laid there for hours upon hours upon hours, not knowing what had happened, not knowing what I'd been charged with, and they kept pulling me out and pulling me out and pulling me out and asking me questions, and I would never answer them. So what they did is they put me into a smaller room and they turned on this like ghetto blaster speaker system of just the most dark, hard rock, Pantera, Megadeth music you could possibly imagine. And they put it up at the loudest volume and they filled that 3-foot by 3-foot box with that music for sections of 4 hours at a time to try to make me, to just make me break. So this is where like that first like mindset started to happen for me, which I now adopt, of I can do anything in this life that I put my mind to. I've already lost everything, but I'm not going to submit to this because this is like, you just can't get any worse. This is the only thing I have left. I went through an entire booking system. I was transported from place to place to place to where I finally got to a county lockup, which is in downtown Phoenix, the 4th Avenue Jail. And I'm going into this situation now in, you know, full handcuffs from feet and hand. And I'm looking around seeing people that are covered in blood, people who have just murdered people, people who have just been raped, people who have just raped. I'm around like the worst of the worst. This wasn't who I am, I'm thinking to myself. I'm a business guy. I'm a family guy. I've been married. I don't break the law. I don't do bad things. What am I doing here? But it was real. There's no getting out of this. There's no, I'm going to call my parents. Nobody's going to come save me from this situation. I don't know how long I was in there. Time ceased to exist at this point. Took me like hours upon days to go through this horseshoe of processing, moving, to where I finally got Sheriff Joe Arpaio's pink stripes on. And that's when I got put into general population. And I will never, ever forget being on an elevator with five other people who had just hurt a lot of other folks with guns and knives and brought a lot of ferocity to the world. And I'm chained to these guys, and I'm not aware if I'm going up or down on this elevator. The Department of Corrections officer that was holding us looked at us and said, "You gentlemen are about to enter hell. God bless each and every one of you, and good luck with your life. Because a few of you probably won't make it out of here." When those doors on that elevator opened, it looked like something from an HBO movie. There was guys playing poker. There was tables. There was like toilet paper rolls being thrown through the air. And I'm now starting to really wrap my head around how bad of a situation I am now in. I haven't ate or drank any food or water for the last 3 or 4 days. And I'm now in this room that's bigger than I could possibly imagine, and I have no idea where to go or what to do. They unhitched me from everybody, and they said, "Go get a roll over there to sleep on. Find a place. There's a little bag of food over there." Walked over immediately and got this little cellophane bag, and it had a Tangelo, and it had a little dinner roll, and it had a little bit of peanut butter in it, and an orange-like sugar drink. Threw that over my back. I went over and found, like, this little bed to sleep on, and these beds have like 12 inches between each one of them so they could stack us in there really, really thick. And I set my food down and I walked over to go get a little mattress, which was a 1/4-inch piece of foam rolled up in a roll. And I brought it back over to my bed and my bag was gone of food. This was the first step forward in like taking ownership for my life. You just took my food and I'm starving and somebody's going to pay for it. Somebody owes me this. This is the first instance where I like wasn't the victim anymore. I'm now going to go out and find who took this and get it back. And that's like I went and talked to people and I'm like, I need my food. and I was able to, you know, get food from somebody else and make friends in this room. Became part of the gang that was in there with the, you know, the Aryan Nation and this white power group, because it's the only thing that I have in there. I don't know what to do. I have no idea where I'm at. I've never been in a situation like this. I spent some time in there, guys. I spent some time in there and I learned a lot. And I learned that everything had been stripped away from me, because if and when I ever get out of this situation, I really truly am the Phoenix. The ashes are going to be laid to the ground and I'm going to regrow from this. And I can choose to save my life and get out of this situation, or I can choose to just let this thing kill me. And I can exist and stay in this prison for the rest of my life. I was able to reach out to people and make phone calls once I got situated into that general population. And I was able to reach out to a friend who was an attorney. And he was able to get me out of there without taking too much, you know, time. And I was put onto parole. And the problem was I had nowhere to go. Nobody to talk to. I'll never forget being released from that jail, walking out onto a sidewalk in downtown Phoenix at 2 a.m. and not having a wallet, money, or a cell phone. I can't contact anybody. The people that are around me are homeless. There's a couple homeless people on the street, and it's probably about 2:30 in the morning, and I'm realizing I have no way to get anywhere, no way to contact anybody, no way to do anything. That was ground zero for me. Walking and existing and sleeping out in the streets of downtown Phoenix, from where I had been 3 or 4 nights ago, living in a nice expensive home, driving a nice car, having everything prepared, taken care of for me, having a business, everything was gone. No family support, no nothing. I was able to finally get to the next morning and find somebody that allowed me to use their cell phone and made a phone call. And I called my folks and I talked to my father. And I said, I know that you hate my guts and I know that you know where I'm at, but I need you. I need you more than anything right now, and I just need you to provide me a ride. Get me somewhere where I can sleep. Thankfully, he took me to a place that was like a men's home. It was a Narcotics Anonymous, alcohol, you know, anonymous style place. It was a men's halfway house. It was in East Mesa, and there were 9 other people there. And the rule was no drinking, no drugs. You had to follow drug test rules. You had to pay $60 a week to stay there. And there were 9 other people there. And you had to take care of yourself. And you had to cook and clean and wash dishes and take care of the bathroom. And that was the most humbling and grounding experience of my life, because I'd never done those things before. I'd always paid somebody else to do it. So it was powerful. It was very empowering. I stayed there, and I stayed, you know, and my folks had like an office that I would sleep at from time to time. So those just became like my crash places, and I began to work. And I began to work so utterly hard to create what I had lost, and put money in the bank and pay off these debts that I'd had for these attorney's fees and these legal bills, and go to these classes for assault and abuse and alcoholism and narcotic use and all of these things. And I literally for 18 hours a day was either working or educating myself to pull myself out of these trenches. So I existed like this. And it was good because I was on the growth. I was on the up. But I never dealt with the stuff that got me there. I had just dealt with the reality check of everything was taken away from you. But that pain and that hurt was still inside. I was on Facebook. Finally got in a computer. And I see this guy's post who I just started following because he had put these videos out. And his name was Sean Whalen, and he talked about this experience called Lions Is Not Cheap. What is this? Do you want to change your life? Do you want to go find like what it is that you're supposed to do in life? Do you want to get your relationships back? And he would tell his story. And I like commiserated with his story, and I understood what he was talking about. And I clicked on it and it said, application. And I'll never forget, I stayed up for like 7 hours filling out this application. But at the top, I wrote, is this it? Is this all that life has to offer? And I answered all these questions about, like, do you understand what meditation is? Do you have any spiritual life? No. Are you afraid of physical violence? No. What's your relationships like? I don't have any. And I would go into depth about all of this stuff, and I literally, like vomited on paper onto this computer screen, like, everything that was in my life. And I'll never forget the opportunity that I had to actually speak to Sean. I was his first applicant, and I was the first person that went through this program. He told me how much it was, and I'll never forget. And I said, I don't have that. I don't have anything. But I damn sure I'm going to find it. The moment that I hung up the phone with him, I called every single person I knew. People that I had hurt, people that I hadn't hurt. And I begged and I pleaded for the money to be able to go on this trip. It took me 24 hours to find that money and send it to Sean and be the first person that went through his program. I had to borrow the money for the flight to get there because I didn't have anything. This was 8.5 months ago, guys. This was the middle of September of 2015 now. So for the last 35 years, I have lived this facade, this lie, this bullshit story of who I am. And I've always, always, always made excuses like, it's your sister. You went through this. You went through that. Your dad said this to you. Your dad said that to you. And what I learned at this trip, this Lying Is Not Cheap experience, was these are just stories. These are just stories that you tell yourself. And the moment that you stop telling yourself these damn stories and start living your life for yourself and take ownership of it, you can have whatever you want in life. I thrived at this retreat. When we got into the fight situation, the fight club, I let him out. I have this most amazing picture of me and Sean Whalen, and it's on my Facebook. It's one of my top pictures. And it's with me and him, beard to beard, eye to eye, and my hands with my boxing gloves right up on his shoulders. And him and I still talk about this to this day. He looked at me and he said, "Let him out. Let that darkness out. Let it thrive. I give you permission to let him out in this room. You give yourself permission, Danny. Let it out." And I let it out, guys, and it was the most freeing experience of my life. Like this, bam, explosion of breakthrough came through. I let all of that darkness, all of those stories, all of the hurt, all of the jail, all of the drugs, everything out during those fights. It was the most like empowering thing in the world because I was able to hit these guys and hurt them, but not necessarily hurt them. It was a metaphor. I was able to get it out. And they hit me back and they honored me. That's the switch point. That's the tipping point. That's where it stopped, the old Danny. And that's where this new Danny who talks to you right now, that everybody that's going to listen to this has seen over the last 8.5 months. That's where it came from right there. That's where he was born. When I got home from that trip, my whole life changed. It wasn't necessarily what the trip taught me. It's what I had learned about myself. And that's that I have way more power and way more capacity and way more smartness and knowledge and everything. I just never gave myself the credit because I always made these excuses. I truthfully was lazy. Honestly, I was just the biggest liar so that I could cut corners in life because I was never going to reach down and pick up that piece of paper like we talked about in the beginning of this interview. But what happened in my head changed my entire life. I came home and I began to live my life with passion. I lived it with meaning. I became a king in my own head and my own world, and I treated myself like a king, and I honored my body. I put myself first before anybody else, not selfishly, but I wake up early and I put myself first. I do my exercise. I do my meditation. I do my study. I connect with people and I let people know through gratitude how much I care about them and how much I love them. And I focus on building new things with my business before anybody else in the world is up, especially my family. So that they can sleep in peace and that I can have peace. And what happened when I got home from that trip was I learned what social media was. Social media for like before this trip and through the past few years before this happened was like this place to like connect with family and friends and post photos of my dog. And I put these memes up from time to time to try to be motivational, to try to fit in with everybody else or try to get attention. But when I came home, I learned the power of video. Hence why I'm going to speak at the Meltdown in the Desert about like the true power of video. And what I did is I began to tell my story. I used the word vulnerable. I used the word transparent. And I used the word authentic. And I drilled those into my head. And I created the 7-day Facebook video challenge for myself. And I hit record and I said my truth. I told people that I was a fake. I told people that I was a liar. I told people of all the stuff that I'd done, that I'd gone to jail, drug issues, halfway house. And I just put it out there for everybody to see so that it was transparent. There's no more lies. And I began to tell more and more stories, and I began to put more and more videos. And this 7-day Facebook challenge for me became like this video challenge of 7 days of telling a different story about myself. And that's where the momentum started, because people connected with that. Because I wasn't trying to accomplish anything. I wasn't trying to build a brand. I wasn't trying to go out and make money. I was trying to like own up to who I was and let people know that you can go through shit. You can be in the dark alley, but there's a way out. And I am going to be a lighthouse and show you guys that are going through the same shit that I did, that there is a way out. So these videos started to happen, and I started to talk, and I started to type, and I started to like connect to that inner child that was inside that had been shut off for so long because it was filled with hurt and resentment and anger for my sister. And when I started to release that anger and resentment, when I tattooed my entire left arm in honor of my sister, I honor her now and I celebrate every day of her life. I don't think about what happened Christmas Eve. I don't think about the cemetery. I go to the cemetery now and I feel her energy like coming through the ground. And I sit and talk to her. And it's absolutely taking me from ground zero to who you guys see right now. So these stories and this momentum, I had like 83 friends 8 months ago on Facebook. I can't have any more friends. I'm maxed out. It's 5,000. I have no idea how many followers I have. I get 400 or 500 likes when I throw a picture up. My videos have 5,000 views. I didn't know there were 5,000 people that knew who I was 8 months ago. So I've created something, not for any reason, not with any agenda. I just was myself for the first time in my life. I put my own feelings on Facebook and Instagram and as content to share with the world, hoping, praying that it would help somebody else. Not to say, hey, look at me. And by not having an agenda, by not having an angle, by just being truly like authentic and real and looking at the camera, if I had a dime for every message I get for people that they're like, when I watch your video, I literally can feel it through your eyes. I can see it. You've been there. You've been in the trenches. And I see where you're at now. And I want to do that too. And that's where I get to help people. So this 8.5 month ride of social media has been what Sean and I call like an anomaly. It's ludicrous what has happened, the impact that I've been able to have with people. If I was to tell you guys that I'm grateful, that doesn't even cover it. Like I would have to say grateful times 1,000 to be able to wrap my head around how thankful I am to be able to have so many amazing friends and family and support on Facebook. I post a photo of me and my daughter, somebody who the law said you're not allowed to see anymore. Restraining order. She can't come near you. You can't come near her. To be able to share that with the world that, hey, I paid my price. I've been beat. I've been stripped down of nothing. And I've rebuilt it back enough to where the law and my family thinks that I'm okay now. I'm okay to be around her. I've got my relationship back. My wife is back. My daughter's back. My mom and dad are back into my life. My business has never been so successful. And it's not about how much money is in my bank account. My business is successful now, guys, because I get to change people's lives. Eddie, you mentioned a little bit ago about a post I put out yesterday about peace starts with suffering. I had to suffer. And I'm so grateful that the universe and whatever higher power is up there put me in that place of suffering. And I've suffered for a long time. And I've paid my price and I've paid my dues. And now I know in my heart, in my soul, and in my gut, and my brain what I'm supposed to do in life. And that's help people. Reach out and touch people. There's people out there that need help. And I can't save anybody. But if they truly want to make a change in their life, I know how to get them there. I've been there. I've walked through the deep water. I've been to the deep end of the pool. I've almost suffocated. And I pulled myself out. And now, in turn, I get to do that with other people. And I do it with the most grateful feeling in the world, like the most peaceful understanding of this is my mission in life. This was my calling. This is my deeper vision. This is what I was supposed to do. And this is why God put me on this earth. He chose to take my sister Wendy and pull her over to the other side for a reason, because he needed that angel to help other people. And in turn, what he did is he empowered me to help other people on this side. And I get to do that every single day, guys.
Well, Danny, and I want to share this with our audience. There's a reason why sometimes me and Jason did not interrupt. Your story is deep. It's powerful. It's true. We can't thank you for sharing it with the vulnerability that you put yourself in by doing so to people across the world, the transparency and the way you did it. But this is why we have this podcast. This is why we reach out to people or individuals such as yourself to let people know that even if they are suffocating, that they're not there yet. That sometimes you have to dive into yourself with humility and be humble and to face that dark demon of taking ownership, that it can happen. And you're a prime example of evidence of doing exactly that, finding yourself and reaching out. And sometimes there's those individuals that are out there. I've been there, and I know we've all been through that. And Jason's story is similar to your story, and my story is similar to your story. And to share your story in the manner you have takes great strength. And what you do to help other individuals, there's no words that can be described to touch on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Danny, if I can try to keep my shit together enough to speak. Thank you, brother.
It's my pleasure, guys. I this is why this was so important. I've never done a podcast. I told you that. I have no idea how to do one. I'm not a great public speaker, but I don't have anything that I have to publicly prepare for. Like, I just tell it like it is, and that's why I'm at where I'm at in life, and that's why there's bigger and better things out there for me, and the opportunity to be able to use a platform like you guys' amazing podcast to touch other lives, that's all I need and want in life. I'm not looking for the next paycheck. I'm not looking to have jets. I'm looking to reach out and touch somebody. As a little kid, and even as a young entrepreneur, I had a dream notebook. It was a vision board and a notebook that I always put down these words. I wanted to move and inspire and touch a larger community, not the one-on-one. Because I worked in the fitness industry, and it was always one-on-one or two-on-one. And I had like 30 to 40 clients, and I thought, this is awesome. I'm helping 30 people. But I want to help the masses. I have something to offer, and I just don't know how to get it out to the masses. And this opportunity came up, and I heard the opportunity, and I reached out to Eddie, and I thought, I would have never done that, ever. whatever. I don't know podcasts. I don't know this stuff. And it was like a calling. It was like my sister was telling me, just message him and see what happens. And lo and behold, it's Memorial Day. And I'm talking to you two amazing gentlemen about what it is that I've been through. And the power of my story is not necessarily what I've been through, but it's that I don't run and hide from it anymore. And I'm not afraid to tell you guys and the people listening of what I did. That's when healing happens. When you own it and you say, I did that. And I own it and I paid my price and I took my beating. And now I've come here. I'll never go back there. Amen. I will never, ever go back there. I'm only going forward. And I actually, to be honest with you, I'm just worried about today. It's Memorial Day and I live in the present. And whatever happened yesterday happened. Whatever might happen tomorrow, it's going to happen, but I can't control that. All I can do is control this moment right now and be as most, like the most present Danny Page I can for you and your audience to help more folks.
Go ahead, Jason. I know this is touching you in a major way because I know your story.
Yeah. God, I can't even keep it together here, man. Danny, I lost my sister when I was 3 years old. A lot of people have heard my story. He helped heal me today, man. I thought I was healed. But hearing how you've come to terms and just where you are, man. I can't think, you know, man.
If I was there, Jason, I'd give you the biggest hug I could right now, honestly, man. I feel you.
I'll be giving you a hug at Meltdown, man. I bought my ticket yesterday. So.
You'd be the first person through the door then, please.
Oh, Eddie, take it over, man.
All right, guys, gals, listening audience, and this is life. This is the beauty. This isn't some social media that Eddie and Jason are pumping this podcast out to, yeah, check us out, check out our audience, so on and so forth. This is life. This is getting you guys and gals to hear stories such as this that are powerful, that are real, raw, authentic, going from no outlets to major success, feeling God has let you down, wanting to check out through drugs, sex, alcohol, fitness, whatever it is, being lazy, becoming a liar, becoming compulsive, self-centered, and full of rage. To the rebirth of living a life to honoring yourself, to living a life honoring God, to living a life honoring a lost loved one, to living today to honor those soldiers that had not come back home. We've all been given a gift. And as Danny said, as he's focused on today, tomorrow's going to come. Yesterday's going to happen. As a father of two kids, amazing, I am truly blessed. Even the same thing is something in baseball. My son gets emotional. He had errors on Saturday and got teary-eyed and told him, dude, if you want to excel and succeed in this game, you got to learn how to take the bumps and bruises with this, and you're going to mess up and you're going to screw up and you're going to have errors and you're going to be the center of attention at times that you don't want to be. But what's going to happen, what's going to mean the most is what you do next. In the next day, yesterday, he made some mistakes, and he looked at me with the stern, solid eyes and saying, I got this. I'm not giving in. He stepped up to the plate, hit some good shots, and did not give in, did not falter. And that's exactly the life and the lessons that we want to share with you, Jason, myself. That's a lesson that Danny just shared with you. And being able to reach out. Sean Whalen, we started following Sean Whalen. And as you could tell, Danny reached out, but now people are reaching out to Danny. And then what if you reach out to Danny and decide to want to work with him or Sean Whalen or Colby Kay or NSLB or any of our other guests, and they are able to help you so you can be that lighthouse for others as well. But as you said, and I love it, is the king eats first. You got to take care of yourself. And Danny, I appreciate you sharing your story with us. I know it was powerful. I knew it was touching Jason in the way it had because I know Jason's story. We've talked in depth, and I can't thank you enough, brother. So,
my pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. Are you good?
Yeah, it's you talking about baseball brought me back into, you know, at least I can speak. But before we wrap things up, and Danny, we've referenced it. I'm gonna, once we get your contact details, I want to show. I have that post that starts "Peace Starts with Suffering." I want to wrap the show with that. But before we get to that, what's the best way, you know, for folks to get in contact with you? Because after an interview like this, if someone needs to surrender and reach out, we want to make sure that they have those details to get in contact with you, brother.
Honestly, the best place is through Facebook. I love Facebook. Just connect with me, follow me at Danny Page. You can't miss my page. You'll see my profile picture and my cover. And shoot me a message. I go through my messages. I don't skip them. Some days I get over 100 messages a day. And part of my my give back for what I've been through is to honor other people and to serve. And I will answer those messages as soon as I can get to them. And I can answer questions and just be there for support and talk about my coaching programs. And what I've created now, guys, is if you've noticed lately, is I'm doing these intensives one-on-one where people come and spend a couple days with me in Arizona, whether it's one day or 2 days. And I've learned something, and I've learned how to connect with people, and I've learned the tools, and I've learned the system of how to change a person's life. And it's the most amazing job I've ever had in my life, and I would absolutely do it for free for the rest of my life with a smile on my face.
Yeah, without a doubt. And folks, speaking of that, because we want to wrap this up, and again, brother, yeah, you're going to get a big old ass hug from me when I see you on June 24th. You have no idea how this was unexpected. I didn't expect for this level of, healing to occur today. And so, yeah, you'll be the first person I'm looking out for. But, folks, I want to share this, what he wrote, and this is regards to one of his clients just recently, and I think it's a perfect way to wrap this episode. And this is from Danny Page. "Peace starts with suffering. Freedom starts with confinement. Courage starts with fear. Strength starts with surrender. Every mountain starts from beneath the earth, and you too have risen. Today is the first day of your new life. Walk tall, walk proud, walk confident." And folks, if ever there has been a time for you to climb, it's in this episode. And Eddie and I and Danny, we're so grateful to every single one of you that have invested your time today with us. So that is a wrap. Danny and Eddie, I love you both. And happy Memorial Day, folks, even though you're hearing this later. But gratitude is the attitude that gives our dreams altitude. And I've never been more grateful on an episode ever. So time to climb. Boom.
Thank you.
Whoo.
That go okay, guys?
Hey, what's up, everybody? Jason J. Boom Ligard here to close the show per usual. And of course, we always start off with thanking our guest today. You know, Danny Page, he over-delivered like we never would have expected, sharing his story for the very first time with no apologies, no holding back, no fear. And I have an extra level of gratitude, as you can imagine, after listening to this particular episode. And I mean, hearing him share what he did today and choosing to do it first here on our show, the Mindset Mountain Podcast, it helps fulfill the vision that Eddie and I have set for what we're here to do on this planet. So again, beyond grateful, stone cold honor to have Danny Page on the show. And then, you know, this next part, usually I'm telling you, hey, this is how you can support the show by opting into our newsletter. You can purchase our product. You can reach out to us for coaching. All of these different ways. And there's plenty of other spots for you to find that information. Today, I've got one single call to action for you. It's simple. Share this episode. Share this episode. That is all that Eddie and I ask of you. That's how you can help support us. That's how you can possibly help save someone's life who is caught up in so much darkness, which we all have been there. but by sharing this episode, by letting them hear Danny's story, literally just ripping it from his very soul, it seemed like. That might be that's just the smallest of light of hope that could drag someone out of that pit and bring them back to the light. That's all we ask. Share this episode. Copy paste this link. Share it on your social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We don't care how you share it, just that you share it. Just once. Just share it once this week. We want to see this episode go all over the interwebs, all over those internets. We want to see this episode showing up, because if you're here at the end, you understand how powerful, how life-changing, how healing one story can be. This is one of those stories. So step up to the plate, take a stand, and share Danny's story. Share this episode. That's a wrap. We thank every single one of you, as always, for investing your time in what we're doing here at the Mindset Mountain Podcast. God bless. And we look forward to seeing you up at the top of the mountain. Time to climb. Boom.